TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. U.S. Election for President. 2004. On October 11th, 2004, Zellerbach Hall at the University of California, Berkeley, filled to capacity, which means over 2,000 people, in anticipation of a presidential election event. But unlike at the two preceding presidential debates, the audience was young, full of passion, and the event was unscripted. Ralph Nader and his vice presidential running mate, Peter Camejo, had come to town. Whatever your plans may be at this time on how to cast your vote, the speeches given that night by Nader and Camejo are essential and help chart a course of action for either case, for a Kerry or a Bush victory. Camejo and Nader point to this unique present moment in history where there is an overwhelming consensus against the war in Iraq worldwide, not just in the Arab world, but in Europe, Africa, and South America. Within the U.S. presidential debates, this fact is ignored, and the only question that is raised is how to wage this war more efficiently. The war on Iraq, the U.S. electoral system, the crisis of the Democratic Party, and the future of the Green Party are topics of the speech you are about to hear. A heckler from the audience even brings up the accusation that the Republican Party is funding the Nader campaign, and Camejo gives a very detailed answer. Here is a standing ovation for Ralph Nader's vice presidential running mate, Peter Miguel Camejo.
Thank you. You know, this election is extremely peculiar. Probably the most peculiar thing about it and about our country and our history is that the overwhelming majority of the people who plan to vote for John Kerry don't agree with him. You know, that couldn't happen in any country in Europe. In Europe, people vote for the people they're for, not the ones they're against. It's an amazing statement to think of how they have train the American people in a political electoral system where you actually would be willing to vote massively. Well, why is that? Well, we all know part of the answer, but I want to try to understand how difficult this must be for John Kerry to know that everyone who's voting for him is against him, and to know the feelings he must have towards George Bush. You know, back in January, Kerry gave George Bush 18 standing ovations at his State of the Union. Now, I listened to it, and I got my hands ready to applaud, you know. I kept waiting for something. Bush to say something that's good. You know, at the end, I never applauded, but Kerry gave him 18 standing ovations. You know, do you understand what a hero Bush must be to Kerry? How many times have you given 3 standing ovations to a speaker? 18 standing ovations. Think of the commitment, the adoration, the admiration. And now he has to run against him. This has to be very difficult. He voted. Kerry's voted for everything Bush has asked him to vote for. And now he has to say, you're doing it all wrong. That's got to be hard. But have you noticed that when the debates are over, they look over and they whisper in each other's ear? Do you know what they're saying? Boy, they bought the whole thing. Look, think about it. There is no debate here. There's no debate over policy. What there is, a discussion about who can carry out the same policy better. That's all. You know, they say that there's something wrong with Bush. That's correct. Bush is peculiar. He doesn't believe in dinosaurs. You know, Kerry is better. He does believe that we're dinosaurs. That is a step forward. But, you know, stop and think about their convention. The Republicans and Democrats both had conventions. And you notice what the conventions were all about? It was all like flag waving, right? America is the greatest. We're the best. We're the strongest. Remember in the Democratic Party convention when they had Kerry's daughter get up there and she went, and I was driving with my dad and he stopped the car and he said, "Look, this is America." Could you imagine if your dad did that? You would be worried about him, wouldn't you? You would say, "Why don't you get a map?" But the whole thing was, we're superior. You know, it's exact wrong message to send the world. Our message should be, we are part of the world. We are all in this together. The whole world has to solve these problems. You know, in this election, Ralph Nader represents a majority point of view in the world. Well, no one challenges that. There's not a single country in the Arab world that supports what the United States is doing in Iraq. There's not a single country in Latin America, Asia, or Africa, or Europe, where the people support what the United States. In fact, there's never been a bigger consensus in our species on a political issue than there is today against what the United States is doing in Iraq. So to exclude Ralph Nader from the debates, where after 65% of the American people say they want him in the debate, is to turn against the whole world. This is obviously not something you would do in a democracy. This is transparent. And, you know, the main issue is the war. And, you know, I really wanted to be in the debate with Edwards and Cheney. Because, you know, after I was in the six debates in the recall, and you know, some of them were really widely covered. You know, the one we did where Arnold was present was shown in all of Europe and all of Japan. I wanted to be in the debate so I could turn to our vice president and say, "Dick, you had this wonderful point you could have made to tell the American people that he had weapons of mass destruction, because you had one argument you never used that would have been so effective. And I just want to ask you why you never used it. You knew he had weapons of mass destruction because you gave them to him." You know, think how simple that would be. They gave him anthrax made by the U.S. military. They gave him mustard gas. They gave him poison gas. And when he used it, they had special meetings in Washington to assure Saddam Hussein that they were still with him. They helped him to invade Iran in violation of all international law. And you've ever watched Bush do that, where he goes, "This man gassed his own people"? You know, he doesn't finish the sentence. "That's why we gave him gas, so he could do it." It's unbelievable that the United States, the public, can think that the United States, who has supported every tyrant in the Arab world, and sometimes when there weren't tyrants, they helped create one, you know, like Saddam Hussein, who said he supported for 20 years, actually go to the American people and say, "We have to invade because, look, this man is a tyrant. Look at the way he took." People go, wow, isn't America good? You know, they took the map, they threw a dart and said, "That country needs democracy." Not Saudi Arabia, not Kuwait, not Iran, not Qatar, not UAE. This one needs democracy. And so they have this guy, you know, this guy they brought over. They have this prime minister now. The Iraqis got a prime minister. It's very hard to have a prime minister without a parliament, because parliaments appoint prime ministers. You know, you can't really be the prime minister when an occupying army appoints you. I mean, the correct title for Alawi is assistant dictator. You know, that's the right title. That's what our media should say. The assistant dictator is here. The assistant dictator today said we have to kill more Iraqis per day than we've been killing. You know who he is? The New York Times ran an article on their front page. I clipped the article because when I saw this article, I said, "Oh my gosh, this is really important." Well, this article says that, well, he was recruited by the CIA in 1992. And what they had him do was, this included, blew up a school bus, school children were killed. That is, he's a terrorist. He commits terrorist acts, and he was paid for them. So he's a paid terrorist, he's a professional. and not one of these amateurs that does it for free. When this article came out, you think that George Bush would have said, wait, we're having a war on terrorism. New York Times puts this on the front page. Either New York Times is slandering this man, or we better arrest all the CIA people that were involved in this, and we certainly aren't going to have Dr. Alawi, the terrorist, become anything in Iraq because we're against terrorism. Well, absolutely nobody says anything. Okay, this, I mean, what more do you need if you're actually rational? What else do you need to know? These people, they have this guy come over here. He gets up in front of Congress. The Democrats and Republicans give a terrorist a standing ovation as part of the war on terrorism. It is the most amazing thing. Look, terrorism is wrong. It's always wrong. Whether it's a Palestinian killing innocent Israelis or Israelis killing Palestinians, it's wrong. Terrorism is wrong. It does not help. You can never solve problems by killing innocent people for a political reason. We all understand that, but that's what the United States is doing, and what the United States is doing in Iraq is endangering America. It adds to the dangers of America. It doesn't end anything. It doesn't lower the risk. And you have Kerry and Bush up there, and when they're talking, you know, it's so... imagine if they let Nader in the debate, someone who actually reads. It would completely change how the American people think. Don't you see the political trap we live in? The prison, the political prison we live in? And then you say, well, why don't they allow runoff so people are free to vote for Nader? They don't feel like trapped. So you don't have a Democratic Party all running around all over the place trying to keep Nader off the ballot and saying, oh, my gosh, you know, Nader, okay, three candidates running. Higher mathematics. How do you handle this? You know? Let's get the math department at Berkeley to sit down and see if there's a way you can have three candidates in a race instead of two. Like, you know, it's like, what are we talking about? This is conscious, deliberate. They don't allow runoffs. They don't allow runoffs like every single country in Europe has, so that there can be no alternative parties in America. This system is already in place. The people are ignorant about it, and they intend to keep it that way so money can dominate America and they can control the people and have the people think that they've elected the government. The answer is so obvious, and it's so simple. You just let people vote. First, second choice, it's done. It's obvious. But, you know, if you allowed people to vote, what would happen is the Democratic Party would collapse. Because the Democratic Party is just based on a huge lie. That they represent labor, they represent minorities, they represent, they're pro-environment, pro-women. Look, under the Democrats, under the control of the Democrats, this state and many others, and the United States as a whole, has gone for 30 years without 90% of the people making one penny more when adjusted for inflation that they were making 30 years ago, while the economy had the greatest growth ever in the history of the United States. How do you do that? Well, one thing they did was they took the taxes and changed the structure so the rich people pay a lot less taxes. Corporations used to pay 33% of the income of the federal government. Today they pay 7.8%. And Kerry wants to lower it further. In fact, many of them just aren't paying anything. You know what they do? They go to Bermuda. They create a company in Bermuda. And then they have this company owns the name of the company. The company in the United States pays rent for the name. And they pay exactly what they make. So there's no taxes because they didn't make any money. And all the money is made in Bermuda where there's a 1% tax. So they don't pay for taxes. But if they have a fire, they call the fire department. And they expect somebody to pay for the public schools when they hire people. They want them to be able to read and write. So the fact is corporate America, and through their two political parties, are increasing the taxes on the average person. Now, you know, I don't know if any of you saw me speak, you know, during the campaign for governor, but when I die, I think I want this on my gravestone because this is the chart of taxes in California. Now, I took this to every single newspaper in California and asked them all to print it so the people of California would know what their tax rates are. No paper would print it. Why? Because the poor people pay the highest tax rate. They pay 11.3%. The richest people pay 7.2%. That is, poor pay 57% higher tax rate for state and local taxes than the richest people of our state. This 1% here has more income than 75% of our people. And in the debates, and all six of them, I pointed out that if the richest 5% would pay the same tax rate as the average person in California, we'd have a surplus in the budget in California. All your tuition increases in Berkeley could be taken back. You're paying the taxes so that Arnold doesn't have to pay taxes. They are taxing you. Remember, Arnold said, promise two things: no cut in education, no additional taxes. Since he's been governor, we are cutting education all over California, and we're increasing taxes all over the place. Just don't call it taxes. Call it tuition. By the way, this is not exceptional. Every state in the union is like this. And the federal government is becoming more and more in this manner. And this corporate thing is just amazing. You know, corporations today have the largest profit margin ever in their history. And the percentage of GDP of profits is now the largest ever in the history of the United States. And Kerry is calling for tax cuts for corporations. And in Congress, they just voted, another $138 billion that they don't have to pay. And there's a guy who wrote a book, and if you're like really into this, read the book. It's called Perfectly Legal. It's by David K. Johnston, who's a registered Republican. He works for the New York Times. That book, to me, is one of the most precious things, one of the best contributions for Americans to understand what is happening in our country. It explains how, for 30 years, they have shifted all the tax burden onto working people and away from the rich. You know, capital gain is what 50% of what millionaires make. That is, people, let's say, that have an income of $50 million a year. Half of it comes from capital gain. So that tax is now 15%. Well, that's the tax rate a person pays when they're making $50,000 or $60,000. So they've lowered the actual taxes for the rich. And then they have ways to get around that anyway. They have loopholes, et cetera. This is the Democratic and Republican Party. And what is the point then? What is the point of voting against yourself? What is the point in going and keep voting for this party? You know, what I tell people is, you know what we're at in this country right now? We're just like we were in 1840, when the abolitionists just got tired of interviewing the candidates and saying, are you for slavery? Yes, I am. Are you for slavery? Yes, but I'm a sensitive about it. I don't think it should spread to Canada. Oh, then we endorse you. And in 1840, they said, you know what? Enough. We're not voting for people or for human slavery anymore. We're going to run our own candidates. And they formed the Liberty Party. You know, at some point, you have to stand up for what you believe and say, you know what? I'm not voting against myself anymore. I'm not interested. Don't tell me there's a difference. I don't care. You know, I want to tell you something. I know some of you are not going to believe what I'm going to tell you, but when you go to vote, I know you're voting for Nader, so I won't say it's you. Go with a friend who's voting for Kerry. And I want you to try something. When they mark the ballot Democrat, at that moment, quickly put your hand on their forehead. You're going to feel a coldness come over their body. That's as the soul departs and goes to the dark side. You know, what is it the Democrats have to do for people to say no? They invade Vietnam, they kill 2 million people in violation of every law there is. You know, I was here at Berkeley while that happened, and this whole student body rose up against it and said, this is illegal, it's criminal, we refuse it. In fact, in 1967, I ran on a slate of 10. We had a rally here on Sproul that started at 9 at night and ended at 5 in the morning. We had 10,000 people there. 135 people spoke. The university, at that time, Reagan was working with the FBI and the university, et cetera. They Sunday announced that 10 student leaders were going to be suspended. And the charge was that we spoke with an unauthorized microphone. Well, what we did is took the 10 students and we ran it as a slate. And the night before the elections, they came to my home at 3 in the morning, the police, and put me in jail. The warrant for my arrest said for good cause. So I asked the police, what are you arresting me? He said, we didn't know. We were going to ask you to see if you knew why you were being arrested. I said, well, no, I don't know. At that time, I was the only person in Berkeley that did not smoke marijuana. So I didn't think of the obvious, you know, to say, well, you thought I was smoking marijuana or something. That was on radio and TV immediately in the morning. So I won the elections at Berkeley by the highest vote ever in the history of California, because all the students' way to fight back was then to vote for me. And, you know, we had that. I don't know if you still have the same system where you vote first choice, second, third, fourth, and so forth. Well, anyway, we won the election, so the anti-war forces took over the student government. So to prevent that from happening, they immediately expelled two students, myself and Reese Ehrlich, in 1967. Now, I've just been given some good news that I don't have to finish my talk. I'm just going to say one more thing. One of the things they tell us is that you can't win. See? You know, the older Democrats especially, they go to you, yeah, Kameo, I know, he talks fast, yeah. Nader, yes, he put in a lot of years, he did a lot of good, but you know, he's making this giant mistake because you can't. Listen, in San Francisco, we had an election for mayor. You ought to study what happened. On one side, you had a candidate endorsed by the Democratic and Republican Party. These are two big organizations, okay? And against them was a candidate endorsed by the little Green Party. And when the first polls came out, they were tied. Matt Gonzalez was tied with Newsom. Democrats became absolutely like, wait a minute, this is really the wrong message. Wow, we have them outfunded 12-1. That's not enough. They became really concerned and they brought Bill Clinton in. He gave up 3 days of his life to fly into San Francisco to campaign and just urge Democrats, please, you're a Democrat, vote Democrat. This other guy's a Green. Okay, then they brought in Al Gore. Now that set them back, you know. Then they brought in Dianne Feinstein and Nancy Pelosi and Jesse Jackson. And you know, the night of the election, the actual vote cast that night, we won by 10,000 votes. It was only because the absentee ballots and the fact that Democrat got 85% of the Republicans to vote Democrat that the Greens were stopped. This is a bolt of lightning of the coming storm. We are destroying the planet. We are destroying the future of our children, our grandchildren. Global warming isn't something that's going to happen. It's something that is happening. Oil is coming to an end, and the solution is so obvious and transparent. All we need is a crash program to develop the technology of alternative energy and to begin to develop it and promote it and create this alternative for the entire world. It's simple. Our species can do it. We know how to do it. We have the capital and the resources. It just takes the will. But corporate America is not going to do it. When they tell you it can't be done, think about all those young people in San Francisco that rushed to register, that worked, thousands that worked on Matt Gonzalez's campaign, and how there were three signs for Matt for every sign the Democrats could put up. And it was just overnight, out of the blue, this party with only 3% of the registration was suddenly even with against the two parties combined. Don't ever say people can't change. I was here when everybody in America started out being for the war in Vietnam, and in 3 years, the entire population switched and became against the war. We won every initiative, every referendum. The problem is, in the radicalization of the 60s, we didn't have an independent party. We had no alternative. The Green Party is a beginning. We got to become Greens. We have to build an alternative party. We have to develop independence. And it's the only way we're going to win over people who were Democrats, like Dan Hamburg, the congressman who's joined the Democratic Party, like many others, that Wilson Riles Jr., the leader in Oakland, African-American, who's joined us like 3 weeks ago, when the president of MAPA, the Mexican-American Political Association, the traditional mainstream Mexican-American endorsement, President Nativo Lopez went to the Secretary of State's office and held a press conference and said, I am no longer a Democrat, I'm a Green, and I call on all Latinos to switch to the Green Party. And then on this TV program, Voz y Voto, they put Nativo Lopez and me on there. And we were... Oh, these people do it for... These are Kerry people. Let me finish by telling you, I'm going to just take 1 minute. The Democrats are on this vicious campaign against us, and one of the things they say is that the Republicans are giving us money. Well, we've gotten 5% of our money has come from registered Republicans, and we expect our vote to be 25%, as it was last time, from registered Republicans. So the real problem is the Republicans who support us aren't giving us any money. So I went on TV and I asked them, what's wrong with you? Give us money. If you support us, give us money. And you want to know something? I told Carrie on CBS National Radio, I said to Carrie, we'll give you every penny we've gotten from Republicans. All we ask is that you give us all the money you got from Republicans. The level of hypocrisy of these people. They found that this is the best way to confuse people and to turn them off against this giant that you're going to hear tonight, who has done more for America than any other citizen in this nation, who has stood up, you know, after so many years of trying so hard to work with both the Democrats and Republicans, and has said, they've been taken over, they're run by money, they're corrupt, they're dominated by corporate world. And before I die, I have to tell you that we have to change this if America is going to be what it could be. That's what Ralph Nader has done. That's what Matt Gonzalez is doing. I know that's what you're doing. Thank you very much.
That was Peter Miguel Camejo, Ralph Nader's vice presidential running mate. He was recorded at the University of California, Berkeley Zellerbach Hall on October 11, 2004. You will hear from Ralph Nader in TUC Radio's next program. Peter Camejo is a first-generation Venezuelan-American. He marched in Selma, Alabama, with Martin Luther King and was active against the war on Vietnam. In college at UC Berkeley and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, he studied math and history. He has worked to defend the rights of Latino workers in the U.S. and to free political prisoners in Latin America. Peter Camejo is chair and co-founder of Progressive Asset Management, Inc., a broker-dealer firm which promotes socially responsible investments. You can find more information on Peter Camejo on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can get a tape or CD that includes the talk by Ralph Nader by calling us. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your tape or CD order is the only support we receive and makes it possible for us to stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 1-877-TUC-TAPE. For information on how to order, you can get your tape or CD by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 1-877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.